Hello, my best friends, and welcome to the latest edition of the DDT Archives. I am Greg, and we have a great one for you today. Chris is on vacation this week, but before he left, we got to cover a very underrated pay-per-view from 2009, that being the first ever WWE Extreme Rules. We recorded this one last week, and it was supposed to be tied in with our two-part interview with Brittany Nicole, since it took place in her current city of New Orleans. There were some scheduling issues. We had some interviews on the books as well. Supposed to be last week. We took last week off. So now it's released today. But before we get to that, just a few reminders for you. First off, August 29th, Hillsboro, New Jersey. Our friends over at Synergy Pro Wrestling are holding their next event titled Heat Seekers. Tickets are on sale now. They will be pre-sale only, so no tickets will be sold at the door. Please go to synergywrestling.com for details. Some of the matches already announced include the Synergy Championship match between Frightmare and Brandon Kirk. Also, we have a match that we are super excited for, that being two former guests of the podcast will be facing off. We will see our friends LSG and Matt McIntosh go at it. Could not be more excited for this event. It will stream live on Fight TV. And like I said, for any ticket details or information, please go to synergywrestling.com. Also, if you've been following our Twitter the last couple of days, Pro Wrestling Tees is holding a summer sale right now. You can get 20% off all wrestling merchandise from now until noon on August 6th. Please, if you can, please support some of our friends that have shirts on there, such as past guests like Masha Slamovich, Dmitry Alexandrov, LSG, TJ Crawford, just to name a few. Also, we got some future guests that we've recorded with already, yet to be released episodes. Guys like Richard King and MLW star Jordan Oliver have shirts on there too. So please support those wonderful performers if you can. Once again, thank you so much for checking us out. We hope you enjoy our salute to WWE Extreme Rules 2009. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the DDT Archives. I am Greg. With me, as always, on the other side is my tag team partner in podcasting, Chris. What is up, my friend?
What's going on, my best friend, everybody's best friend, Greg?
Oh, nothing, man. Just enjoying this late night Thursday. I got hockey on in the background. It's cool. I know this is usually the Wednesday spot, but we had a few scheduling issues and mishaps going on this week. Couldn't get together, but we had some time tonight to sneak this in after a wonderful interview we had. If you've seen our Twitter, we interviewed Coast to Coast. That was LSG and Shaheem Ali. We reunited that legendary Ring of Honor tag team. So hopefully you guys can hear that soon. But yeah, man, it's been a weird week. And just a few housekeeping things. We had Brittany Nicole on this week. She's going to be on the podcast on Friday as well, part two of that interview. We hope you enjoyed part one. If you haven't heard it yet, please go and download it. It is off the wall banana sandwiches. One of the most fun interviews we've ever done, right?
Oh, it was absolutely off the rails before we even started. I'm not even sure that we mentioned that we were the DDT Archives until about an hour into the show. It was fantastically awesome.
Absolutely. And so we kind of dedicated this week to her because being from New Orleans, so we have her two-part of her interview. And then what we did in between is we watched the pay-per-view that took place in New Orleans, which is what this pay-per-view Extreme Rules 2009 was. But before we get into that, just a few housekeeping things we want to get out of the way. First of all, please go on to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever you want to do there. Drop us a review, rate us, subscribe to the show. Follow us on Twitter at DDT Archives. You can follow Chris on Twitter at
Chris_DDTHSLB.
And just a quick reminder, we will not have a Wednesday show next week because you are on vacation, sir.
I am.
But and when we come back, we're gonna cover a show that is near and dear to our hearts. It's the first pay-per-view I ever been to, and it's the first pay-per-view you ever worked at, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, so we're going to cover a absolutely classic event, which is SummerSlam 2002. We were there, so we have a lot of great stories from that experience to couple with the breakdown of the pay-per-view itself. But until then, next week we're going to have three interviews for you. We've been working so hard this summer to bring you the very best content, and Chris has been working his ass off booking talent after talent after talent. And so we have plenty in the bank just to kind of keep us going. To one of us, I'm going back to work soon. You're going on vacation next week. So we're not going to miss a beat. So don't even worry about that. And we're sneaking this one in a little bit late, but it's fine. Who cares? It's our show. We do what we want, right?
Yes, it is our show. We do what we want. And that is our mantra. We are the Wrestlers Podcast. Everybody else can go. And rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes, they can. Thank you. And follow us on social media. Appreciate it. But this pay-per-view we're covering tonight is something I would characterize as sneaky good. You wouldn't expect it as like this post-WrestleMania, before SummerSlam kind of throwaway pay-per-views that they have. But here we are at Extreme Rules 2009. So did you have any preconceived notions about this show before we started it, or just looked at the card and be like, nah, it seems okay?
It was more of seems all right. This is definitely a period of time when I wasn't watching pay-per-views.
Me too.
So I don't think that I saw it initially at all. It is definitely a sneaky good pay-per-view, without a doubt. For a throwaway, it was solid.
And that's what we're trying to do. And as we always talk about on the podcast, it's like we don't want to do easy things. So when we think about doing a New Orleans pay-per-view, it would be easy to do WrestleMania 30 or another WrestleMania that took place at the Superdome. Screw that. We wanted to do something a little bit off the beaten path. And this definitely has this, because it's got a ton of stars on it. And some really good matches and some great rivalries and a lot of things that have had repercussions in today's wrestling. So it was fun to go back and watch this for the first time for me, and like you alluded to, for you, to kind of cover something we've never seen before. And it's the first Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which is kind of funny when you think about some of the shit that JR says during the show. It's the first ever Extreme Rules. It's kind of the continuation of the ECW one night stands that took place at this time of year. They've molded that, now that ECW is on Sci-Fi at the time, they've molded that into this pay-per-view that features all three brands of Raw, SmackDown, and ECW. It's also the first pay-per-view that's taken place in the Crescent City of New Orleans since the 2001 Rumble, which is a great show. We could have done that one too, but also maybe a little bit too easy. But a lot of the matches on the card are carryovers from the previous month's pay-per-view. That was Judgment Day. So just keep that in mind, because I'm going to bring that up a lot. And from the outside looking in, it looks like a fairly basic event. But all in all, there's two legitimate classics on this show.
There are. And I want to throw this out there, because Extreme Rules is usually my least favorite pay-per-view to watch. Like, if I didn't have the network for free, I would never watch an Extreme Rules pay-per-view. It just isn't something that is my cup of tea. I like the occasional gimmick match, you know, one or two on a card. I'm not a huge gimmick match in every match kind of guy. But in this one, there are some absolute show stealers in there.
No joke. And I'm the same way. And like we saw just a few weeks ago, with their latest Extreme Rules, because there's been one every year ever since, and that wasn't very good, but this show is. And it gets kicked off with a really fun short match that is a fatal four-way for the United States Championship, and that is Kofi Kingston, who is the champ at the time, versus William Regal, versus Matt Hardy, versus MVP. And all of these guys are still extremely relevant in today's wrestling, right? 11 years later.
100%, and some of those guys had some wear on their tires then. So, I mean, it just speaks volumes to their contributions to the business. It was a fun match to get people excited. You could see from then the talent that Kofi had. His gimmick, not so much, but his talent far exceeded what you were seeing there. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so how did we get here? So on the May 25th episode of Raw, Kofi had won a triple threat number one contenders match against Hardy and Regal. And then the following week, which is the go-home show before this Raw, but I mean, before this pay-per-view on Raw, he beat MVP for the title. So he's only been champion for 6 days. But that's how we get all four of these guys in this match. But like you said, it's a fun match with a great pace, perfect curtain jerker type match when you look at it. And, you know, just a few notes here. Matt Hardy's theme, the V1 theme, the Monster Magnet song, that has got to be in my top three favorite entrance musics of all time. I don't care what anybody says.
Eh. Eh. I don't know. Anthony Green takes cake. He's my favorite theme ever. Period.
Shout out to Anthony Green. Great showing at GSI 2020 this past weekend. Like you said, a lot of these guys are still prevalent in this match, right? In wrestling still, you know, Matt Hardy's in AEW. Kofi was the WWE champion last year. He was champ and just got off a tag title run. Regal is terrific as the NXT general manager. And guess what? MVP is your current United States champion 11 years later. So, and let's talk about him for a minute. And I want your thoughts on MVP, because it's a guy that we haven't talked about. And this pay-per-view, I didn't say yet, but I meant to. This is very recent for us. This is like, compared to what we usually talk about, this is like doing a show from the future. So talk to me about your thoughts on MVP.
I love that MVP lives that gimmick. It really comes across as that's who he is. Therefore, it makes it believable. I love his story that he overcame so much adversity. Like, he's a role model to young people in terms of overcoming things. I think he's worked hard for everything he's got in this business. I don't take him for granted. He's definitely in the twilight of his career, but I think he's a guy that will make that transition to be a legit manager. And will do a really great job doing it, getting other people over, because the dude can talk.
Perfect stable leader, for sure. Absolutely. He needs like they're doing now. He needs a couple of guys because he can really carry that for sure.
You know, the only thing that I would do differently, and not even in a fantasy booking person, I would make sure that you get a young person in that stable as well. You know, as much as I Shelton Benjamin, legit badass, great collegiate wrestler, like no knock on him, no knock on Bobby Lashley, ridiculous athlete, you know, just you have so many young performers that are so good. Where are they?
Yeah.
You know, put them in that group. They fit, whether that be a Cedric Alexander, that be a Ricochet, either of them would be great. I would like to see that, but you know, who knows? That may be coming down the line.
Yep. That little stable they got going there, whatever it turns out to be, has got some steam behind it and some legs under it. So looking forward to that. Way to bring current events. See, this is what we do. We kind of bring the current events to the past, which is fun. So then we get a bus stop interview with the Big Show, who's inexplicably in his gear on his tour bus hours before the show. I hate when they do that. I don't know why. Don't get me started. But the second match of the night is a bona fide gem between two legends that have an incredible history together and have faced each dating back to their days in the WCW Cruiserweight division and even in Mexico before that. We get a no holds barred Intercontinental Championship match between Chris Jericho and Rey Mysterio. And this match is fantastic. Fantastic. For guys that, well, this is 2009. You're looking at 13 years before this, 12, 13 years before this. They're having bangers on the WCW undercard. And here they are, still, you know, low on the card here, but the Intercontinental Championship, they're killing it right here. So tell me what you thought about this one.
Rey Mysterio and Chris Jericho at their absolute peak. I mean, Jericho always reinvents himself. Mysterio really hasn't His character stayed very consistent over the years. Maybe less of an underdog now than he was then. It was a really entertaining match. Like, you don't realize 15 minutes has gone by when you watch Jericho and Mysterio. Like, later on, I'll have some stuff to say about some of the longer matches on the card. But in this match, this was perfectly timed. They hard-hitting, exciting pace, like, gave us a little bit of everything. And it really, it was entertaining.
For sure. And Ray had won the IC title from JBL at WrestleMania in that incredible 21-second match they had. That was JBL's retirement match. He was subsequently drafted to SmackDown, and then he began his feud with Jericho. And this was at the height of Jericho's that suited slimeball role, one of my favorite versions of Jericho. But I say that about every version of Jericho because he's one of my favorites of all time. He beat Jericho to retain the title at Judgment Day, so here we are at Extreme Rules. There's a section in that match where Ray does a suicide dive, and we see suicide dives 50 times a week on television, right?
Yeah.
Ray's suicide dive in this match makes all of those look pedestrian. It's like he hovered in the air for a minute and a half and legitimately flew. It was amazing. You have a very creative finish where Jericho avoids the 619, then takes Ray's mask off. So while Ray is trying to recover his face, protect his face, Jericho gets the roll up and the win. At least Ray didn't lose a Spencer's Gifts gag eye. You know, you don't like to see that. But yeah, either way, it's Jericho's record 9th IC title, a record that stands to this day. Great match. I mean, they would have a rubber match at the Bash, which wasn't even the Great American Bash, and a title versus mask match that Mysterio would win. But all in all, just a complete and utter classic. There's two matches on this card, like I said at the top, that are absolutely must-watches, and this is one of them. So what's your favorite version of Jericho?
I really liked his whiny WCW gimmick, to be very honest. I thought that was when Jericho became Jericho. So I'm very fond of that. I liked him in the, what was it, WrestleMania 19 when he went against Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of version was pretty good too, where he was a little sneaky. All his reinventions just happen at the right time. If there's ever been a performer that understands the audience, it's Jericho. No matter what change it is, whether it's the Painmaker, Le Champion, you know.
Yeah.
They're only slight tweaks, but they're tweaks nonetheless, and he manages to completely stay relevant.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more. This is up there. This may be two behind the version that you mentioned, because I just liked how he was that cool, calm, devious heel. And it just worked for that time period, because you didn't get that a lot during this time. So next up, we get a backstage segment with Batista that sets up his cage match with Randy Orton for the WWE title later on in the night. And then our next match is CM Punk against Umaga in a Samoan strap match. I feel like we're doing a lot of strap matches, chain matches lately. There's a lot of backstage stuff going on between this. Their rivalry goes back to the beginning of May. On SmackDown, Punk had attempted to cash in his Money in the Bank contract on Edge. Keep that in mind as we move forward with this night. But he was thwarted by Umaga. That led to their match at Judgment Day that Umaga won. And then Umaga kept pestering Punk and started using the leather strap in his attacks. But the one thing that was cool about this match was they had a little scoreboard in the corner that told you when they touched the... If you guys don't know the rules of a strap match, they're tied together and you win by touching all four turnbuckles. So they had a little scoreboard in the corner. I love that. That was so cool.
They changed the rules of strap matches.
Did they?
They did. So normally guys could, like, in old school strap matches, both guys could hit a turnbuckle and still be going.
Okay.
And the old school cheesy finish was the good guy leaps over the bad guy who's been ahead of him on the first three, and just his momentum carries him to the fourth turnbuckle. That clearly is not the case with this one, but that's okay. I thought I actually enjoyed this match.
Me too.
I thought that it told a pretty good story of an underdog Punk who is just super small compared to Umaga, who's this dominant force, but he just kind of outwits him a little bit. And Umaga is a guy we haven't talked about because obviously this is one of the rare late 2000s pay-per-views we've covered. He was so good and so talented and just taken way too soon. You know, he had world champion written all over him. Like, he was going to kind of set the bar for that generation of Samoan athlete.
And he was kind of on the rise, too. He had a couple years prior to this, he had the big match at WrestleMania between McMahon and Donald Trump and Lashley. He was involved in that. But this is his last match in WWE. Because he's fired the next day because he failed a drug test. It was his second failed drug test, which isn't a fireable offense, but he refused to enter treatment. So that's why they just released him. And that decision ultimately, sadly, ended up costing him his life because he kicked around indies for a few months. He ended up in like Hulk Hogan's promotion for a little bit. And, you know, by December, he's dead from a heart attack. He had a slew of substances in his system. So, I mean, just a sad end to a really good talent, a guy that we will hopefully talk more about in the future. But yeah, he had something special and it showed in this match. But this sets up CM Punk for later on in the night, which is kind of cool. But Punk as a babyface has always been weird to me.
I mean, he plays the heel so much better, but at the same time, like, even when he was a heel, the crowd loved him.
Yeah,
you know, he's one of those guys that the better the character he portrayed, the more the fans liked him.
All right, any other thoughts on this one?
No, just good match.
Good and match. It is a good match for a short one. It was pretty solid. And then we get a triple threat hardcore match for the ECW Championship. Yes, this is ECW on Sci-Fi, the not as good version of ECW for sure. And it sees your ECW champion Christian versus Tommy Dreamer versus Jack Swagger. So this is Christian's second stint with the company following his run with TNA. He came back earlier in the year. He won the title from Swagger at Backlash. He retained at Judgment Day. And then Tommy Dreamer kind of gets involved. So Dreamer's storyline here is that his contract had expired with WWE and it was extended by one day so he could be in this match. And if he lost, he'd be gone. But he doesn't lose. He wins, and he becomes the only person to hold the original ECW title that he only held for like a half hour, and the WWE ECW title. The match isn't bad, but it wasn't really engaging either. It was tame for a hardcore match in the middle of the PG era, and I could never watch the ECW version here, so I don't really know what else to say about this one. What were your thoughts?
I fast-forwarded through this match. I'm sorry.
I fast-forwarded through the next thing, which was the Hog Pen match.
I went right through. Yeah.
It's a hardcore match. There should be it's just trash cans and kendo sticks. Like, it's really stupid.
It seemed very repetitive.
Yeah.
In all honesty, like, there wasn't a variety of weapons that you would expect. Listen, I love old school Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer post 2005. Listen, I'm sure it sounds like I'm being disrespectful. That's not the case. I love Tommy Dreamer in the original incarnation of ECW. That's the Tommy Dreamer I love. And while he has contributed to the business exponentially after the fact, this is just a little bit past what I enjoyed. He's still working to today and good for him. Like, he still puts on good matches, but they're not, to me, it's not the same as what it was.
That's fair. I thought it was cool though, because his entrance music kind of sounded like a bad cover version of Man in the Box, which was his theme by Alice in Chains, which was his theme in ECW, which was kind of cool, but that's about it. Anyway, he's your new ECW champion. Congratulations. Then we get the hog pen match with Santina and Vicky Guerrero. Complete waste of time. I fast forwarded through this, so we're just going to skip right over that for for time purposes. We have a steel cage match for the WWE Championship between former members of Evolution, Randy Orton and Batista. So how did we get here? Orton had beat Triple H for the title at Backlash, then started feuding with Batista, who had returned from a long hiatus. He came back the night after WrestleMania that year after tearing his hamstring at SummerSlam the year before. They faced off at Judgment Day, and Batista won by DQ after the Legacy got involved. In case you forget who the Legacy is, that's Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase Jr. So Orton's still champ, and that sets up the cage match, so Legacy can't get involved. Pretty basic, old-school blow-off, let's tell a story in a cage match, right?
Yes, it was. And I liked the build-up with what Orton was doing to Flair. Batista's mentor, and he's getting the shit kicked out of him, as only the Nature Boy can do. And then all of a sudden, he gets locked in a cage with Randy Orton. And I thought they did a really good job of hiding some of the warts that could have come from this match. Batista matches are fine as long as they're under 10 or 12 minutes. This one happens to be about, what, 7 or 8? And it was good. It was paced right. You had the highs, the lows, then the highs again. I liked it. I don't always like a good Batista match. This one I enjoyed. And I think a lot of that goes to Randy Orton doing Randy Orton things. You know, as much hate as he gets, as people like to call him Randy Borton, I don't see it. I think he is phenomenal. And he is so smooth. Like, it makes it easy to hate because he makes it look so easy. But he won't go too far. He won't kill himself just for the sake of killing himself. Like, he's done this for a long time for obvious reasons, because he makes smart decisions.
And I'm really looking forward to him against Drew at SummerSlam. I think that match is going to be phenomenal. Just throwing that out there. A little preview. But like, I think I wrote down, like, this match was what I expected out of the two of these guys. But it's by no means, and it's good, like you said, but it's by no means memorable.
No.
It's just like, this is a match that could have been on any Raw at any point, anytime.
I think it was booked that way on purpose.
Yeah.
Because of what's going to follow it. You know, you don't, I'm not saying you never see two bangers of a match back to back on a show, but they happen to be that way. They weren't booked to be back-to-back bangers, because the reality is it's like an ebb and a flow. You want to make sure that there's consistent movement so that the fans stay into it. And if this had been super high intensity and crazy, what's going to happen with the next match, which is the main event on the card and one that should absolutely be a banger?
True. And, you know, Batista wins. It's his fifth career world title, but it's a short-lived reign. How short, you ask? One day, he tore his bicep in this match and has to give up the title. They beat him off TV. Oh, that didn't sound right.
Hi, Brittany.
Hi. The Legacy attacks him on Raw the next night to injure him and get him off TV.
The legacy of beating him off TV.
Yeah, it's great. It's very, very nice. Good things.
Oh, boy. We are mature adults.
Yeah, right. So next up, our second to last match of the night is not very good. It's a submission match between John Cena and The Big Show. And they get a very nice hype video, which is probably better than the match itself. Their feud started when Big Show cost Cena the world title at Backlash in his match against Edge. It was a last man standing match. Big Show chokeslammed him through a spotlight, so Cena was unable to answer the 10 count. They had a match at Judgment Day, which Cena won. And then this match is announced as a submission match because Big Show is convinced that John Cena can't get the STF on him, which is an interesting twist, but it's also stupid because that's not the only submission in the world, so I don't really get that. You probably did not like this match.
No, I did not like this. I liked the finish of the match.
Yeah, it was good.
I liked the finish. Big Show is an attraction. And in being an attraction, he should be booked so. You didn't see Andre the Giant in a 20-minute classic very often. There was a reason for that, especially later in his career. This match was just a little bit too long for my liking. They're both extremely strong and talented performers, so you can do enough damage to get that submission in 10 to 12 minutes and you don't need it to drag on to 19. That was the only issue I had with it. It slows down the pace of the match because of the length of the match. And I think both of them are capable of putting on a better performance in a shorter window.
And that was my issue with it too, is because when you look at these two guys, putting these two guys in a submission match is stupid to me. It just doesn't make sense. These guys can fight. The match didn't go along like it was a submission match. There was no real psychology in it. There was no body parts being worked. It was mostly just generic brawling. Until you get to the cool finish where Cena kind of gets Show's legs tied up in the ropes and then he locks up, that frees up his arms to get the STF. That was all well and good. But that was the problem I had. It's like these two guys are fighters. And in an Extreme Rules setting where you have carte blanche of matches you could have between these two guys, it just seems like they spun a wheel and that's what it fell on. I was like, oh, I guess we're going to do this. And it just, because this was the time where Big Show, his big thing was the knockout punch. What are we doing here? That was the issue I had with it. That's what didn't make sense.
I mean, there could have been like better stipulations.
Yeah.
Like lacking in standing.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it be false count anywhere, you know, things like that would have been a better fitting. Like, if I want to see a great submission match, I want to see guys like Malenko.
Mm-hmm.
In there, where there's going to be guys turning in 42 different submission attempts out of every different angle in any different way. That to me would be very appealing. It would be very interesting. In this case, we get a submission match with, yeah, John Cena uses his STFU. Big Show, no, he's not a submission guy.
Yeah,
overall,
it would be better fit for...
Yeah, and I like the way they finished it, but that was it.
Yeah, even just off the top of my head, even a tables match would have been interesting because you had Cena try like getting the Big Show up for the for the attitude adjustment or the choke slam out of the Big Show. There's a lot of ways you can go there and make it fun where you could see that kind of playing out. That's just off the top of my head. It really doesn't matter. But this match is really long and just not very exciting, except for the finish at the end, which is pretty cool. And then we get our main event, which is another really unsung classic for two guys that have really built their careers on ladder matches in tag form. They get a singles one here against each other, and that is a ladder match for the World Heavyweight Championship between Edge and Jeff Hardy. I'm big on stats, but not like lists and rankings and star ratings and bullshit like that. But this match on Bleacher Report was ranked as the fourth greatest ladder match in the history of WWE, which is pretty remarkable when you think about all the great ones between the TLCs and HBKs versus Razor Ramones and things like that. So this is up there, and it's really good. Excellent, even. And, you know, these two guys started working against each other after Edge beat Cena at Backlash. Like I said before, Jeff Hardy's your number one contender, so he faces Edge at Judgment Day and loses. But Teddy Long says since Matt Hardy interfered, Jeff gets a rematch. Edge and Hardy had a match at SmackDown on May 22nd, with the winner being able to choose the stipulation. Jeff Hardy wins. He picks a ladder match. There's a fantastic hype video before this that chronicled their whole history together in ladder matches. And I absolutely love this one. It was good. It was violent. There's a lot of cool spots and different twists in here. What did you think?
I thought it was awesome. I know there have been a lot of great ladder matches. In terms of singles, it's number two behind the original. And that's just because I had never seen it before. These guys put their bodies through absolute hell without hesitation. The move where Jeff jumps off a flying ladder to land on the title that's hanging just is insane, only to get destroyed from there. Like, it was nuts. It was absolutely just they threw caution to the wind and just said, let's go, and they went.
There's a sharpshooter in the ladder, which I had never seen before. There was Jeff does the whisper in the wind off like halfway up the ladder, which was kind of insane. And then the finish is something that I had never really seen before, because Edge is climbing the ladder. Jeff goes underneath it, pulls him through, so he gets stuck in between the rungs, and it allows Jeff to climb up and grab the belt and win the championship. And this match, for sure, like I said when we talked about Jericho versus Rey, that match and this one, go on WWE Network. Watch those two matches if you haven't seen them or if you've forgotten about them. That's why we do these kind of shows, because they're either new to us or things we haven't seen in a long time. But damn, this match is classic. Absolute classic for a time where either of us weren't maybe really watching a lot of wrestling.
This is definitely a time period where I wasn't consistently watching. I would watch it on TV and fast forward and just kind of move forward. It really wasn't until probably 2011, I got back into it with the Pipe Bomb promo. I remember starting to watch more and more. Always watch the Big Four. You know, that always happened regardless. But anything in between, I really just never really cared about at this time. You know, this match, best one on the card by far. It leaves open for the ending. It was very clear that, you're cashing in the money in the bank. Dude just went through hell. Now's the time. Get it. The fact that Jeff kicked out the first time was awesome, but then it was over.
That was the thing. There's two ways that they really telegraphed this. The first is when they showed, before the ladder match started, they showed the belt hanging above the ring, and there was no nameplate on it, which I thought was kind of odd. And then you saw something that you never seen, is that the pay-per-view is basically over. Jeff's celebrating with the title, and you see JR in the ring about to interview him, which you never saw then. So you kind of knew something was up. And then CM Punk's music hits, and out he comes. And like you said, he catches in the contract. He immediately hits a GTS. Jeff Hardy kicks out. Jeff gets a close roll-up for a two, and then Punk nails him with a kick to the head, a second GTS, and that's it. He gets the pin. We have a new world champ. It's his second world title. Like you said, a really good ending that sets up, like, you're in the early June here. This is June 7th of 09, so you're kind of setting up where you're going, heading into SummerSlam at this point. And it's a really, like we said, it's a sneaky good pay-per-view that's not very long. It's under 3 hours. And you get two really classic matches out of it, and I enjoyed it, considering we just watched like the 2020 Extreme Rules, which wasn't that good, and then that WCW show Bash, Great American Bash 91, which was just god awful.
I said, what's the opposite of a banger? Should we just call it a bash?
yeah I guess that would be, that's probably a good idea. Yeah, I like that. But this, like we said, this match is, there's two classics on the show. So go back and watch those if you can. And any final thoughts on this pay-per-view before we wrap this up? This is a quickie tonight, but it's late. I don't care.
No, this was a good pay-per-view to watch. It was fun. Fast forward that couple of minutes in the middle, you know, where you know it's not going to be the best of stuff. Overall, it was good stuff, and we've been waiting 2 years to let loose this SummerSlam 02 pay-per-view.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. From the story of how we got our tickets to the event itself, and we'll preview it a little bit. Here are some of the matches we got. It's Rey Mysterio's first match in WWE against Kurt Angle, Jericho, Flair, Edge, Eddie Guerrero, the Un-Americans versus Booker T and Goldust, RVD versus Benoit, Undertaker versus Test. That's kind of hilarious. And then we have Shawn Michaels' return match after 4+ years out against Triple H in that street fight, which is a classic. And, of course, in the main event, it's the coronation of Brock Lesnar. So we will give you all the behind-the-scenes and fun stuff we had to go through at Nassau Coliseum, which is, you know, I'll wax poetic about how fucking terrible that arena is. I have no problem doing that. But all in all, it was a fun adventure, and we can't wait to talk to you about it in depth. As always, you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at DDT Archives. You can subscribe, rate, review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and drop us a line, man. Our DMs are open. You can follow Chris at
Chris_DDTHSLB.
And like we always say, we're going to continue to bring you a lot of fun content when it's old school, and by far the best wrestler interviews. We are the Wrestlers Podcast. We've been told that many times by the people that matter, so I'm comfortable saying that. And we have a lot of great stuff coming up on the horizon, so we're really excited to talk to you about that in the future. My friend, please enjoy your vacation. Have a great time with the family.
I appreciate that. Everyone, go on Pro Wrestling Tees. Support our former guests, such as the Ace of Spades, such as TJ Crawford, such as Blanco and Dreamgirl Ellie. Go on and support all of these fine, fine people. Jaden Newman, you know, some of the young guys, Dale Springs. Go out there and support, support, support. Everybody is working so hard during this time. Give them anything that you can. You know, I'll say it 1,000 times, and this is where me being a big guy, I feel bad because most people don't have my t-shirt size when I go and buy at a show. So I tend to stick with pro wrestling tees, but I'm getting svelte little by little. And eventually I'll be buying them at shows, because understand all the money goes into their pocket if you buy it live versus getting a portion of it if you buy it on pro wrestling tees. Definitely hit those people up. Show love to indie wrestling. Show love to Synergy Pro Wrestling. They are fucking incredible. Can't say enough good things about Colin and the product that he puts out there. Support the whole New Jersey wrestling community. Guys like Nikos, Rikos, Vicious Vicky. Just get after it and have fun.
Absolutely. And all those people we mentioned, their fantastic interviews are in our archives on Apple Podcasts and everything. They're available. They're all up there. So please check them out. And they're all starting to work again now, too. So be sure to check out their social medias, wherever they are. See where they're performing. If they're doing a show near you and you can get there, please go. Support them. Like you said, excellent job tonight, my friend. Everybody, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Be safe. Take care of each other. Wear a damn mask. And we'll see you next time on the DDT Archives.